I get so many questions in my DMs from y'all about commercial pet foods, whether it's what foods I'm feeding my dog, what foods I recommend, why I would feed this over that. But one question that I keep getting over and over and over in my DMs is about HPP'd food. So if you're not familiar with that, that's high pressure processing. And we have had many, many years of experts in the field telling us that it's just not what we want, that we don't want HPP'd foods, that, you know, X, Y, and Z can go wrong. It's not really raw. It's putting, you know, leaching toxins into the food from the packaging that's being used, blah, 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 so many things. And this is not the first episode we have done on the Pet Parenting Reset about HPP'd foods. In fact, the last episode I did on HPP'd foods was telling you about how we were all wrong about it. And that came from today's guest. So Billy Hookman, if you're not familiar, I don't know how you wouldn't be, but just in case, he is the Vice President of Nutrition and Communication at Green Juju. And he did a deep dive into HPP because he was one of those people, long time ago, thought that we did not want, like it was not preferable to use HPP as a kill step in creating raw foods for pets. But once he dug deep and looked at the science, all the research, checked out how it actually works, implemented it in Green Juju's freeze-dried raw diets, he saw that we were all wrong. The science is telling us that we were all wrong. So he's here today to explain and answer some of these very specific questions that y'all have sent to me on HPP processing and raw food commercial diets for our dogs and cats. So here we go. Thanks so much to Billy for being here. And we're going to talk all about it. Hopefully I get all of your questions answered, but at the end, Billy will let you know how you can reach out to him if you do have some more. Billy, thank you so much for joining me today. And this question I am getting multiple times a week in my DMs. So I figured, why not make a third podcast episode out of it? Because people obviously aren't getting enough of it. So we're going to talk about HPP, and I thought you were the perfect person to talk about it.
Well, thank you for having me. It is a funny, like, you know, it is kind of fun to talk about hot button issues, although this, I don't think this should be one. That's the interesting part, I think.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I'm rethinking it as well. I was one of those people that thought, I listened to people that I really trusted, other veterinarians who were like, no, you can't HPP the food. It's not really raw. And then you went and like shook everything up. So can you tell me what HPP is? How does it work? Just give people a little bit of an understanding of what the heck it is we're talking about.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing about that, what you just said was, I would put a wager on the fact that most of those people you talked to probably got that information from me over the years, because I was definitely one of the most outspoken people on the other side of this, which is truly is science, is how you look at data and you reach conclusions. If you ignore data, if you had a position that HPP is not good, and then you don't look at any new data not in support of that point, then you're not really doing anyone else favors. You're not practicing science. And so that's a very interesting starting point. So HPP is essentially a process using pressure for two outcomes. The first outcome is in other industries. So in other industries, they use it less for like safety, because it's a raw product. So obviously they're not making like, you know, raw food chubs for humans. So they're not using it on that safety aspect of it. They're using it more as a shelf life extender. So it's actually really interesting. I went to Went to a HPP and freeze drying conference slash kind of workshop at the University of Nebraska, like maybe 6 months ago. And it was, you know, on within that conference. So we obviously learned a lot about it, and we got to tour some facilities that do both freeze drying and HPP. There are very few facilities that do both in the same one. So that's pretty rare. Green Juju happens to be one of the companies that's produced in one that does have both, you know, in the same vein. So, So, you know, in touring some of these facilities is really interesting, because what you saw there was everything that we eat generally. So you saw, you know, guacamole, lunch meat, anything that's in plastic packaging and has an extended shelf life, especially like lunch meat or something like that. So like when I go to like my Whole Foods and buy, you know, my daughter, you know, pastured organic ham meat, lunch meat, that's going to be HPP to extend the shelf life. And so it's a pressure of reducing pathogenic bacteria by a certain amount of logs or a certain amount of those bacteria reduction, with pressure as opposed to heat. And so those are two different things. And I think people treat HPP like it's heat, but it's not, obviously. And so it is interesting how they do it, you know, in the human food world, because they just put those packages straight in there. So let's say they're going to do coconut water. I'm just naming a random product. It's not like they're putting the coconut water in these in a big thing and then doing it and repackaging it. They're actually putting it in the little bottles you get at the grocery store. They're just filling the machine with those bottles. And different industries have different varying amounts of pressure. And so that's basically the process. It's essentially one of the pathogen mitigating or reduction steps that a raw food company uses. It's just one of many, right? Another one would be keeping the product at, you know, 32 degrees or slightly less when you're mixing it together to reduce the ability of pathogens to grow. You know, the other one might be spraying it with ozone. These are things that all raw food companies do, and this is just one of those processes, which is why I sort of was, you know, I'm always surprised when people stick to that one and say, this is the one I don't want, versus what about all these other ones that are happening? It's not as if when we make raw food, and especially when it comes from where people want it to come from, say the USDA meat, all of, and then when you go, so if you, like, we use all USDA meat, right? And companies that are verifiable, say on Susan Thixton's list, use USDA meat. So all of those places also have pathogen reduction steps. So, and then that meat gets to us, and then there's more. So within that line of reduction steps, it's just one of, you know, I don't know, let's just say like 10 or something like that. So, it'll be interesting to see how the perception shifts over time.
So a lot of companies use this, not just in pet food, but in human food. None of it's like, we don't know this. It's not on the label of these packages. So it's just happening a lot behind the scenes, and we just don't realize it. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for sure. I would say the only people that probably label it as juice companies, you know, the difference between like fresh in-house, or, you know, I think like a good example of that would be like Whole Foods. I think they went away from having it freshly made at the store and having it made at like a central facility that they have and then shipped out. And so you'll see it on there as well. But yeah, pretty much, you know, now I guess people know, but you know, pretty much everything that, like I said, is in plastic packaging and refrigerated and has an extended shelf life, especially on the meat side, has been HPP for sure.
So you talked about some of the other kill steps. What, how many are, do you want to talk about how many there are, all the different ways that companies, specifically raw pet food companies, are using different kill steps? And should we care at all? Or is this something we should be talking about? Or are, well, we just, I mean, neurotic?
We should care because it doesn't just come down to pets and what's safe or unsafe for pets. It does come down to regulation. It does come down to the FDA. It does come down to a lot of factors. And we want to be able to produce raw food. The FDA is not going to mandate, never say never, but they're not going to mandate any production step because then they would be responsible for said step. So, you know, they adapt the policy of being like, you need a food safety plan, so you make it, and then we'll verify that, and then you're responsible for it if something goes wrong. So they're not going to do that, but in order to be sort of, you know, not continually harassed and that kind of thing, you have to be doing some sort of log reduction step that is viable. And what I mean by viable is like a certain number of bacteria, of the pathogenic bacteria, being reduced. So everything else, like I said, it just depends on what your opinion of it is. You know, when you get chicken from the grocery store, your organic chicken, and it's dipped in parasitic acid, is that a deal breaker for you or is it not? You know, is it benign? Is it not? That's USDA, you know, standard for that. You know, spraying ozone is another one I consider to be benign. And then also, some people use, say, bacteriophages, which are viruses that, you know, target specific pathogenic bacteria. So with each one of those, you just kind of have to look at, here's what the good parts are and here's what the no negative parts are. But I consider all of those to be pretty benign. You know, in order to avoid that, you'd have to basically buy all of your meat from a local farmer that does all of his or her own butchering. And that's really the only way. Like, my family buys a pig every year in December, and that is gonna, you know, that pig is raised by my cheesemaker and then is butchered by my butter guy. And I know that that's, you know, just straight up old school, sort of like traditional butchering. But most people don't have access to that. And so the other part that's interesting too is HPP has been going on for so long in the industry, but just hasn't been talked about, that there's been people who have been doing it and just not talking about it. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, you'll see comments online where you're like, oh, well, I go to this brand because they don't HPP. But then you figure out that, like, you know, basically all the freeze dried in the country is HPP, just generally. So it's like, wait a minute. So you thought your dog was doing great because it was non-HPP, but it was HPP'd and your dog was doing great. So I think that, you know, that's kind of like, you know, a nice little control group in a study, in essence. And so I think we're seeing the proof of that now. And it just, you know, it's one of those things.
So there's no industry standard on what you have to do to mitigate the bacteria. Is that what I'm understanding? But is there...
Yes.
Any sort of industry standard on the HPP process itself?
No. So the HPP process will be different, just like the freeze drying process is different, depending on if it's a human food, if it's, you know, like, here's a good example in freeze drying between human and pet food. You can freeze dry it at any, so there's always some added heat to freeze drying. And that could be higher, lower. It can be, you know, whatever your freeze drying facility or if your freeze drying is willing to do. So it's the same thing in HPP. So like when I went to that conference, they had liver out and they had differing levels of pressure and length. And then they had like the liver in bags and they could show you like the discoloration and or like what it looked like for differing amounts of time. So if you're doing HPP in the raw food industry like us and you want it to be raw, then, you know, on our end, we're doing it for less than 2 minutes. I believe offhand, it's 67K pressure, which is as far as I know, lower than what they were doing, for instance, when they started doing HPP in terms of length and amount of pressure.
Okay. So one of the reasons that was previously given for not wanting to use HPP in raw food was that it changed the nutrient, that it killed everything, not just the bad bacteria, but the good bacteria, blah, blah, blah. And that's not the case, correct?
No, no. So the interesting thing about that is when somebody says like the phrase HPP just kills everything, and they're not talking about specifics, it means they probably don't know very much about HPP or just nutrients in general. And what I mean by that is it's good in those cases if you bring up specific instances. But the first thing to mention too is that, you know, when people use that phrase and they say it kills the good bacteria, what good bacteria are they talking about in meat? There's no real probiotic bacteria in meat. There's background flora, which may contribute to probiotics, or we don't know exactly what that is. So that's the first, I'm going to go into the second part and say that it doesn't kill those things. But even if it did, it's not like your dog is getting its probiotic source. You know, that's why, you know, Agri Juju, we do things like Bam's Beets and the raw milk and things like that, because it actually has probiotic bacteria. So you really just have background flora. So even if it did kill all of the bacteria in it, you would be killing the bad bacteria, and you're not taking any quote unquote good bacteria out of your dog's diet. But we do know that that's just simply not the case. And that comes from a study done by a product that was being developed for, they basically, what happens is it's a way to reduce bacteria by inoculation. So it's a probiotic blend that you have to let sit on product for a certain amount of time. And then it reduces the bacteria by as much as, say, HPP. However, the reason why it didn't work in raw pet food as a marketable thing for companies is because you'd have to literally let the food sit out for like 2 weeks and then let this bacteria grow, which the consumer is not willing to do, right? So, but before they figured this out, that it would only be good, I believe it's used in kibble now, before they figured that out, they took their blend, put it on food, HPP'd it, and what they found was that the bacteria were surviving that process. And so I'm not here to say all bacteria survive, but all bacteria don't survive freezing. So we know that, you know, a reduction in bacteria is going to happen when you do any processing. And so I think the first point is, don't think you're getting your dog's good bacteria from meat anyway, but then also we do know that they do survive. And so, you know, I feel very confident when I feed Huckleberry and I'm feeding him his freeze-dried HPP food, and then also adding foods that contain a multitude of other good bacteria. He's not missing out on anything.
Okay. See, that's why I have to ask you these questions.
I had to bring it back to Huckleberry, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to talk about what's going on in your life, right? That's how we relate. So some of the other questions that I've seen around HPP are, changing the muscle fibers, and I guess some people have questions about, does it make it more or less digestible?
Yeah.
Can you talk to either of those?
The digestibility one's really easy. It's the same digestible. Digestibility study labs are really easy. And shout out to Steve's Real Food for doing a lot of, you know, the research in this. The relevant research, which is actual tests done on actual raw HPP food, not, hey, we took this random study from the juice industry and we found this, which is great. You can infer things that are potentially relatable, but the most relevant data is going to be on the raw food side of pet food. And so the digestibility is the same. The muscle fiber thing is, I don't doubt that the muscle fibers could be affected, but what is the overall effect? So let's say we determine that the muscle fibers are slightly affected. Okay, well, what is basically, and I was talking about this during a Q&A last week, you have to look at the pros and cons of every food that you feed, and you can find a con list for anything. So you could say, I like to feed my dog blueberries. Blueberries are an amazing thing to feed your dog. However, there are cons on that list of things. And if you want to focus on those cons, you could put together a pretty strong list of reasons not to feed blueberries. And that's the exercise we go through with everything we feed our dogs and cats is, hey, and for me, even in formulation and for, you know, bringing out new products, that's what you go through is like, I want to do this. Well, what are the cons and pros and cons? The only food I don't think really has cons is raw milk. But aside from that, everything. And it goes back to depends on the specific animal as well. So I think that it affects everything in a slight way. But that doesn't mean it's overall something that's negative, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. What about fat oxidation? Does it increase fat oxidation?
The only studies that have found fats oxidizing is if HPP is done for 20 minutes or longer. And RHPP is done for less than 2 minutes. So the short answer is no. That's a big one for me because I love fats. I'm a huge proponent of, you know, it's healthy amounts of saturated fats and omega-3s and things like that in humans and dogs. So if I thought for any reason that, you know, the fats were oxidizing in our buffalo, I just called it buffalo, wow, bison food. Don't kill me, Water Buffalo Association. I've seen you at APCO meetings and I know how intense you are. So don't come after me. So we have a bison food and not water buffalo. And I fed a tacoberry, or I'm feeding a tacoberry tonight. And if I thought for any reason that the omega-3s in there were oxidized, I would not feed it.
Okay. So the other thing that I keep hearing with this like high pressure is that there's a concern with toxins or microplastics leaching into the food during the process. Is there any validity to that?
There's one study done on that, and that was, again, by Steve's Real Food, and they measured I have to look at their references on their website. I can't remember exactly which type of plastic, you know, they were referencing on that, but they tested for that in the food itself and didn't find any accumulation after HPP. So I would say it from what we know, and I never want to infer things for what we don't know, because I think that happens a lot in the pet food industry. I think people are doing that a lot with copper right now. I think they're inferring from things that we just don't know. No. So there's, at least in pet food, there's one piece of data and the answer is no. So, and that would depend too, like, again, going back to the fat thing, right? Say the 20 minute. So if fat, that study, comes from a different, from a different industry, I can't recall what the food was offhand, but so you can see that there's different lengths of time in which they do this. So if you're saying, hey, plastic migrates into the food and it came from a study where they're doing something for 20 minutes, that's not relevant to what we're doing at, you know, less than 2 minutes. It's sort of also like the heat processing of it as well. That is actually the start of my journey, which was going to an HPP facility. And I was always under the impression that that much pressure generated heat, and that heat would be like cooking the food. But then I went to an HPP facility and I was looking at the temperature while the machine was working, and it went from 41 degrees to 43 degrees. And so I was like, oh, I was wrong about that. What else am I wrong about? And that's a great thing when you realize you're wrong about something, because you can learn. I love, you know, the way that I view nutrition now, as opposed to, let's say, you know, 15 years ago, is completely different in a lot of ways. And so, you know, that just dispels another myth there, that there's heat that's applied to it because of the HPP process, which just isn't true. There are some industries that apply both heat and HPP, but raw pet food's not one of them.
Okay. So we know that pet parents can be very neurotic. So if they are still concerned with how their pet food, whatever they're buying for their pet, is being processed, the kill steps they're using, especially if they are still concerned with HPP for some reason, what would be some of the questions you would pose to a pet food manufacturer if you were to call them up and ask them about it?
I would just say generally asking them for, what are your manufacturing food safety steps? And let them explain it to you. Because, you know, a lot of them, you know, a lot of pet food companies, us included, have manufacturing partners. And that's not, and so some of these processes are going to be very similar or the same, depending on the facility it's produced in. And that information should not be hard to get necessarily. If they don't answer you back, that's not a good sign. If they, you know, and give them a little bit of time. I know from being in a small company, you know, for instance, if you reach out right now to info@greenjuju.com, it's me and Kelly that answer it, like, you know, every time. So give us a little time, because, you know, we're always doing a million things, but usually we get back to you pretty quickly. So, but I would just ask them to lay out what their manufacturing safety steps are, and then you can kind of go from there. And then you can go into more specific questions. But I would say, like, all of the HPP now is becoming more standardized in the pet food industry, because they realize what pet parents want, which is a raw food product. So they're not thinking to themselves like, oh, well, we can just do this to make sure for longer, you know, we want in. And I guess that's sort of speaking from more from the experience of the facility we work with. But I'm sure it's not that far off or different at other facilities as well.
So thank you, by the way, for answering all of those questions, and hopefully it can make some people sleep a little bit easier at night. I know, like, there were times in the past when I was very much like, no, I'm not buying that product because it's HPP'd. And I have bought products not thinking that about asking the question. And then, I don't know, maybe my brain was just like, oh, my dog didn't do that great on it. But she loves the Green Juju products and she does really well on them. So maybe it's just a difference in, like, the time, or like you were saying, there's it's not really super standardized, but
it could be also a quality thing too.
It could be,
well,
what?
It's definitely you. It's you,
it's
for sure.
It's always me.
No, it could be a quality thing as well. Like, you know, all HPP products do not come with the same quality standard. And so, you know, I would put our products against anyone's. I think we make the best products in the industry, but, as far as quality goes. So I think animals just do better on our products because we put a lot of care and time and into the process.
She does. My dog does do very well on the products. So I know that y'all have announced that you're going to be doing a frozen raw, and that's coming next year, correct?
March. Yeah, so we're working through that process right now. It's a pretty easy process on my end because it's the same formula as the freeze-dried food. So that's going to be really cool because I think we did something special there. And you know, Kelly's hard at work on the packaging and, you know, the back end of that, and working with the facility and that kind of stuff. but I'm excited about it because the price point is really good, in my opinion. And we don't ever want that to be, you know, a huge barrier. And we can finally get big dogs involved. I know you don't have a big dog, but it's very hard for big dogs to be on freeze-dried diets completely. I get emails about, you know, my 80-pound dog, how much food, and I'm like, and by the way, we're releasing Frozen in March, you know, is my typical response, because it's a bit difficult. But also, I know there's just a preference for frozen food because it's one less production step. I know freeze drying is another one where people are like, well, that's not raw food. Well, it's like, well, the thing is, if you make a freeze dried formula versus a frozen formula, you don't have to reformulate it at all because the nutrient profile is exactly the same. So we know that's raw food, but also we do know, I know that, you know, for myself, I know there's value in, you know, reducing production steps just in general, like at home, for instance, you know, Green Juju is an amazing milk that's available for people all around the country because they can't get raw milk just generally. But that also means that I might feed my dog fresh milk because I live in Pennsylvania. And it's never been frozen. And, you know, I'm in the land of raw milk. So I do think there's value in, you know, reducing your production steps and eating that way. But the frozen is going to be really cool, I think. So,
yeah, I'm excited about it. I think a lot of other people are as well. And the processing steps you were talking about, I recently learned every processing step increases histamine in the foods. Is what I've been told.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, you've sparked something in me. I'm making a mental note of that. And
yeah. And... Well, that mentor told me, and because she's been through this journey herself, and it actually has made a big difference in some of my clients' dogs who didn't want to feed their dogs a raw food diet, but eventually when they just couldn't get over the hurdles they were looking to get over, I'm like, let's try raw. And they did it. And they're like, oh my gosh, just because we needed to reduce the histamine load. And it's been really, really incredible. So
interesting. Yeah. I mean, I would say like, I probably have a little bit of a different take on histamines than most people in the industry, in regard to, like, I think that most people and dogs, their body has a system for just, you know, eliminating excess histamines, i.e. like those foods shouldn't be a problem. That's not to say that there's not some dogs who are potentially very sensitive to that, or people, but
these are sick dogs.
the idea that, like, you know, I hear a lot like, oh, don't feed fermented foods because they're high in histamines. Well, yes and no. Not all fermented foods are high in histamines. It depends on how they were fermented, and there's a lot that goes into it. But, you know, I think what can happen online is that you get a theoretical idea like that and you apply it to all dogs, when most dogs and humans would benefit highly from fermented foods and would be able to easily deal with any sort of histamines that come into play. You know, it's like when you see someone drink a glass of wine and their face gets all red, that is really high in histamines, and that's a different kind of, you know, high in histamines. And so but that's interesting. Yeah, so for those people that, you know, are looking for frozen, and I should mention, the only one we're not going to have is bison, because we kind of are maxing out our sourcing on that already. We use more bison than probably most, than any other company, I would guess. At least, you know, in the indie pet scene. But we will have five other very novel proteins that range from cooling to warming. So I think that will be fine.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again for answering all of the questions that have been sent to me on HPP'd foods, and very excited about what Green Juju has coming. If somebody did have more questions, I think you said it earlier, info@greenjuju.com.
Yep. And like I said, if it's a nutrition question, it will go right to me. Or if it's something that's Kelly related, it'll go to her. Or, you know, we do have a little bit, you know, we do have a little bit bigger of a team now. We just hired someone. And so it'll go to the appropriate person. But I do enjoy nutrition questions. So feel free to reach out.
Send them. Okay. Anything else you want to plug for Green Juju before I let you go?
Yeah, we do have, in November, we have a venison broth coming out, which we will be, it was funny because me and Kelly always do a live whenever we, release new products. We did a live about the products I'm going to talk about in a second. We will be doing a live about the venison broth. It is frozen. It is wild harvested venison, which is really cool. And then we're also releasing goat freeze dried food, lamb freeze dried food that we debuted at Super Zoo, and also goat purple. And those are amazingly sourced, grass fed, great omega 3 ratio products. And so really excited about that, and excited for, you know, in those cases, like, it's always like Huckleberry's been eating goat for a long time, and it's fun that when it actually goes out to the public. So look for those as well. And I think that's about it.
Did you feed it to him through the summer? Goat?
Not a bunch. More recently, actually, because I got a bag of... So we actually changed the formula slightly. It was going to have dandelion greens, but now we use parsley as the leafy green, because we wanted the sort of medicinal effects of parsley with, you know, what we're looking for in formulation, like the vitamin K1 and fiber and things like that. So we had like a run of this like dandelion green goat, and we sent it out to our employees, but we all got a bag. Like, it was like a 14 pound bag. No. Yeah. Of freeze dried food. So it's a huge bag. So I've been feeding that and giving it to some people and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I'm a variety person as well. So.
Okay. Well, Billy, thank you so much for being here and for answering all of my questions, even though you had no idea what they were ahead of time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.